This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code SWORD10.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 144. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
You sound kind of depressed when you said that.
I sounded what?
You sounded kind of depressed.
Oh, really? See, I was going for serious news guy. Like, okay. And I'm Tom Merritt. These are the top stories. But it just ended up sounding depressed.
I'm sorry. But anyway, this is the podcast where we talk
about...
Maybe
the news is depressing.
It is. No news is good news.
Yeah.
Well, this is a show where we talk about the latest in science fiction and fantasy news, which is often very good and very interesting. We also discuss what you guys are talking about over on our forums at goodreads.com. And of course, we discuss the book pick of the month. And this is a wrap-up and kickoff episode. So we will be talking about The Demolished Man by Alfred Bester. And also about our upcoming pick for October, which is Bone Shaker by Sherry Priest. But anyway, let's kick off the episode with a little segment we like to call What Are We Drinking, Tom?
I am drinking Andy's Crossing Malbec. Picked it up at the grocery store. It was one on the end cap. For $11.99. I even remember how much it was. Mm-hmm. I needed to have a red wine to make spaghetti because I always put a little red wine in the spaghetti.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so I opened it up because I'm going to make spaghetti later. And it's okay. I like Malbec. Some people don't like Malbec.
I do,
but
too.
It's not that I don't like Malbec. It's a little, I don't know, maybe it's just too young, but it feels spicy. Mm-hmm. Or raw or something. I don't know the right wine words.
I like spicy wine.
See, spicy is the wrong word. Yeah, it's peppery, but not in a good way.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not working for me.
I'm drinking a 2007 Sansepre Superi Vineyards Cabernet Sauvignon. Funny story behind this wine, actually, Tom. I believe you have a bottle of it as well. And I will tell you why. It is the wine that myself and your lovely wife Eileen both received upon the cancellation of our Zeppelin ride.
Oh, we drank it mm-hmm. already. But yes, we did have that. You're right.
The tiny bottle.
That's so funny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like a half bottle.
Like a half liter or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
We'll be a half of 750. 750
sure.
milliliters.
So it'd be less than a half liter.
So
but
it's three...
375.
375 milliliters.
Says the old half-price books worker. I can divide anything in half.
I should have known that better because I worked at a liquor store for many years. But we didn't sell half bottles.
Well, let me tell you, half-price books, you learn how to divide everything in two all the time.
There you go, half price. But anyway, it's pretty good. I've been holding on to it for a while, but I decided I don't want a full bottle of wine open in the house. I just wanted half a bottle of wine
Perfect.
Open in the house.
Perfect time.
So it worked out very well. Well, let's jump into the actual first segment of our show, known as the Quick Burns.
Charlie Jane Anders of IO9 fame got a TV deal. Her story, 6 months, 3 days, which, by the way, won a Hugo Award.
By the way.
That would be awesome enough, has been picked up by NBC. as a basis of a TV show.
It is pretty exciting. I saw her tweeting about this earlier this week. And let's see, the adaptation will be written by film and TV writer Eric Garcia, author of the novel Matchstick Men, on which the feature film was based. And also, there was another person involved with it too. Ritter Garcia, Janilari, and Silent Machines' Lindsay Liberatore are executive producing. I guess I have to actually read the Deadline Hollywood article again to
figure out who those people are,
because they took little segments of that article and put it here in the tour post. But I'm so happy for her. That is awesome. She's great. We love her over here, and I can't wait to see what this turns into.
Yeah, I'm excited for it too. And if I remember from her own post at IO9, and maybe I should have found that one instead of the tour one, she is going to be able to have some amount of input on it.
Yay.
And I can't remember what, which doesn't always happen. Sometimes they're like, thank you, author. Here's your check. Go away. Leave me alone.
So in case you don't know, 6 Months is a story about the relationship, according to her post on IO9, between two clairvoyants whose power works in different ways. Doug sees the future as set in stone with no free will. Judy sees the future as a series of branching possibilities, not unlike Gretel from Ian Tregellis' stories. They both remember the future rather than seeing it on a TV screen or whatever, so both of their parents are subject, powers are subject to all the failings of memory.
That's so cool. And I am excited to see that carried out. Like, if it can be carried out well, that's a really good plot device. It just needs to be, you know, NBC, not alone in sometimes taking a good story and messing it up. So I really hope that doesn't happen.
Absolutely.
Because this is too good of a story to mess up. NBC, you'd be good with that story.
And we also have a post from Charlie Jane Anders over on IO9 about a new grant that is set to encourage science fiction writing from diverse worlds. And when we say diverse worlds, we don't mean diverse worlds in the science fiction and fantasy sense.
Right, not like this one's got octopuses and this one's all water and this one's all ice. We mean diversity in the heroes. On the crowdfunding page for it, they point out that there's one story that's told in the genre over and over again. You've probably seen it. It's about a straight white man, or often a bunch of straight white men, creating things with science, wielding magic, saving the world, blowing stuff up. If there are women or people of color involved, we're probably love interests or sidekicks. We probably only talk to or about the white male lead. We probably die first or to provide motivation for the protagonist. So they want to create a grant that, you know, helps people who want to write other kinds of stories have a little leg up and writing them.
Yeah, it's really about embracing all different kinds of diversity. So like gender, race or ethnicity, sexual orientation, class, ability level, religion, according to their crowdfunding page. So it's kind of opening the doors to encourage writers to embrace these different kinds of ideas and different kinds of characters, instead of kind of going with the tropes that we're all very accustomed to in the science fiction world.
And honestly, I think one of the reasons that that has been the case in science fiction is that a lot of the authors that were accepted for publishing, especially in the early days, were white males.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for whatever social, economic, or other reason, people are going to write what they know more often. So I think this grant is great, not only because it might help get diversity in authorship, which I think we have more diversity in authorship these days, but it might help people try to write in other perspectives that they might say, like, look, I am a white male. It's risky to jump out of that and go try to write something else. And so I like that motivation to say, come on, take a risk. Not that white males should be getting the grant money. That's not what I'm trying to say. But anybody should be able to say, hey, you may be a African-American female, but maybe you should write from the perspective of a Pakistani guy. You know, try that. See what you can do. Get out of your comfort zone. I love that.
Exactly. I had a package being delivered at the front door. So that's why my phone was ringing in the background.
I didn't hear it.
So. You didn't hear it?
No, I'm sure it was loud enough to hear on the podcast, but it was barely audible because I was talking. I was listening to myself. One of my favorite things to do, Veronica.
And while you were talking, I put myself on mute and I answered the phone.
Oh, very good.
Took the package because who knows what it is.
So you missed all of my incredibly important thoughts.
I did, but I'm sure it was wonderful. I'll have to listen to it on the podcast.
It'll be downloadable for your listening later.
For my convenience later. Or also just automatically on my computer at the end of the show.
Hey, guess what?
What?
The folks over at mybookishways.com have put out their top 10 must-reads of October, and there are 14 of them.
Oh, great. Because we need, oh man, we got a new Dan Simmons.
Yeah, I know.
Abominable. Abominable by Dan Simmons.
Also, Eat Brains Love by Jeff Hart.
I'm kind of mad I didn't write a book with that name.
I am too. That was like that's brilliant.
We've got Year of the Demon by Steve Bean.
I'm actually looking forward to Copperhead. Yeah, I think so. Copperhead is set in an alternative version of early 1900s England and is the sequel to Tina Connelly's historical fantasy debut.
Oh, Six months ago. This is science fiction and also horror. Science fiction, right. Fantasy, and horror.
Copperhead is science fiction and fantasy. My Book Ushuaïs puts it all as genre fiction and puts some horror in there as well. So if you look at this list and you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like science fiction or fantasy, that would be why. But Copperhead, 6 months ago, her sister Jane uncovered a fae plot to take over the city. Too late for Helen, who opted for fae beauty in her face and now has to cover her face with iron so she won't be taken over.
In her face.
Yeah, in your beautiful face.
In your beautiful fae face.
Face, F-E-Y dash.
Oh, nope, that pun doesn't work when you're saying it out loud, Tom.
It really doesn't. Also, have you heard about Lighthouse Island by Paulette Giles?
I have heard Giles? Of it. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, I don't know that much about it, but I've heard a lot of different places recommend it, so I wasn't surprised to see it on My Bookish Ways. In the coming world, the world's population has exploded and covered the earth with endless cities. Animals are nearly gone. Drought plagues the land. Cloudy water is issued by the quartz. There are no maps, no borders, no numbered years. On this urban planet, the only relief from overcrowding, the petty informers, and the harsh rule of the big agencies is the television in every living space. Hmm. Ain't that the truth?
Hey, Tom, do you know what Saturday is?
What is Saturday, Veronica?
Saturday is Star Wars Day.
Star
Wars Reads Day.
Star Wars Reads
Me. Specifically, Star Day. Wars Reads Day.
Yeah.
So there are going to be Star Wars book events going on all across the country. If you're here in the Bay Area, there will be one at Books Inc. over at Opera Plaza on Van Ness. So definitely go check that out. There will be authors Pablo Hidalgo and Stephen Sansweet will be there. But seriously, events all over the country. You can meet with authors, people who write in the universe.
The Barnes & Noble on Research Boulevard in Austin will be holding an event.
No.
There is no Los Angeles event?
It does not appear so. You could probably do an unofficial event, like a meetup.
Yeah, I suppose.
If you really wanted to. I mean, it's kind of
somewhere Star Warsy.
Yeah. Do you have any place Star Warsy?
I don't know. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of places where they've filmed things.
Oh, yeah.
For things.
That's a good point.
See, I always think of Star Warsy, I think of Lucas Valley Road in Marin County, because that's where it is.
That's where Industrial Light and Magic is. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah. Also, Random House is launching Flipboard magazines, one curated by Margaret Atwood. Excuse me. Sorry, Margaret. And the World of Ice and Fire, the official George R. R. Martin magazine. Yay!
This is pretty cool. I really like Flipboard, actually. I haven't used it recently because I stopped using my iPad a lot. So maybe I'll go back to it on iPhone. But I love this idea of curated Flipboards. I think that's really cool. It's a great way to get new content that you're not going to find anyplace else. That's not going to be on those traditional Flipboard publications. I wish we could do something like this. I wish we could do like a Sword and Laser one.
Ooh,
wouldn't that be neat?
That would be cool. We could. There's no reason. You can do curation and then make them available for people.
Oh, okay.
We should do that.
Let's do that.
I haven't thought about that.
Okay.
Yeah, like because we have so much time.
Because we have so many links, we could do all the links from the shows.
That's true. We could just make a magazine out of it. That might not be too bad because we're already collecting the links, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Seems like that'll work.
But anyway, Margaret Atwood and Westeros.org are already at it. I think it's definitely a cool thing to subscribe to if you're an iOS user. I don't know if they have it for Android, do they?
You ask me these things as if there is not a searchable index of things at your fingertips as well.
All right.
So let me Google it for you. Yes,
there is a Flipboard for Android. It is on the Google Play Store. Just Google it like I just did.
If we only had an interconnected network of computers with which we could look up this information.
Tom, don't you sass me.
I did want to point out, by way of changing the topic so Veronica doesn't kill me, that the World of Ice and Fire is curated by Westeros.org, which Veronica said, but that means that George R. R. Martin is not taking time out of writing to curate this.
Don't get your pitchforks. Don't gather up your massive villagers.
Put the pitchfork down.
And go after him. He's working hard. Although I did read an article that said he's a little concerned that he's not going to be able to keep up.
Guess what? I am a little not surprised.
Yeah, I know. Guess what, George? We could have told you that 5 years ago.
Know thyself, George R. R. Martin.
Totally. Well, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. And hey, guess what? Bone Shaker by Sherry Priest, narrated by Will Wheaton and Kate Redding. Is available on Audible for one credit.
Hey, guess what? I'm downloading it now.
All right, but didn't you download it on Kindle already?
Yes, you didn't have to tell everybody my stupid mistake. I don't know. I looked at Amazon and it didn't say audiobook. So I'm like, well, I guess I have to buy it on Kindle and get the ebook version. And then, of course, when we're getting ready for the show, Veronica's like, oh, we should make Bone Shaker Audible pick because there it is. Totally available on Audible, Tom, you idiot.
I just searched for it on Audible and it was the first thing that came up.
So I bought it again. I didn't buy it. I have an Audible subscription, so I just used one of my credits. That's the best part about Audible is that you get a credit a month on this plan that we're giving you, but you don't even have to spend a dime to try it. Go to audiblepodcast.com/sword and you get a free audiobook if you haven't signed up yet.
Totally free. And thank you to everyone who's been posting to audible_com on Twitter, telling them how much they love our show. It's really nice to see some recognition that way as well. Letting them know that you're listening to the podcast, you found out about them that way, or you just enjoy reading along with our book picks on Audible. It's a lot of fun. I will admit, I did not know or even think to download Bone Shaker as an audio book pick. I had known that it was there and that Will Wheaton was one of the authors and Kate Redding, who I've listened to before in the past as well, I probably would have gone that path.
Well, and that's what clinched it for me, right? I was like, well, I guess I'll just stick with the ebook. Let me see who narrated it. I'm like, freaking Will Wheaton and Kate Redding. I cannot pass that up.
I'm going to post on the Twitter account the link to the Audible too.
Oh, good idea.
Just so people remember in time in case I haven't downloaded it already.
Don't make our mistake unless you already have.
They pushed me, the audience. They wanted to know what the book pick was going to be.
It was. I actually put on a disguise and got in the rabble and was like,
"You probably
pick
did.
The book." Pick.
Pitchforks. A lot of pitchforks going on this month.
So many pitchforks. Anyway, Bone Shaker could be free if you're not already an Audible subscriber. I don't know why you wouldn't be, but audiblepodcast.com/sword. Don't forget that.
Yes. Please support the show by subscribing to Audible. We are big fans over here at Sword and Laser. Alrighty, let's move on to the calendar. A lot of stuff, as we mentioned, on October 1st, like I said, The Abominable by Dan Simmons. We have The Lost Stars, Perilous Shield by Jack Campbell. The Godborn, The Sundering, Book 2 by Paul S. Kemp. Johannes Kabel, The Fear Institute by Jonathan L. Howard. Hopefully I said that right. Day 1, A novel by Nate Kenyon. What, Tom?
Cabal, maybe? I don't know.
Cabal. Did I not say Cabal?
You said Kabel.
Kabel.
Could be Kabel.
Kabel. I don't think it is. You're probably right.
I'm sorry.
The Neuromancer's House by Christopher...
Necromancer.
What?
Not Neuromancer.
What did I say?
You said Neuromancer, like William Gibson. Oh! It's Necromancer.
The Necromancer's House by Christopher Bullman. In the Company of Thieves by Cage Baker.
Yes. Good job.
Bastion, Book 5 of the Collegium Chronicles, a Valdemar novel by Mercedes Lackey. And Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie. Do I have to read any more? Can I be done?
No, I'll do the rest. Okay. October 2nd, Kabu Kabu by Nnedi Okorafor.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, right? I'm sure I'm getting corrected by somebody out there. October 8th, The Republic of Thieves by Scott Lynch. Woo! I have too many things to read. The Girl Who Soared Over Fairyland and Cut the Moon in Two by Catherine M. Valente.
Oh, hey, you know what I'm looking at right now?
What?
A copy of The Republic of Thieves sitting on my floor.
Shut up. The Diamond Deep by Brenda Cooper. Old Mars, which is a collection of short stories edited, which means they get to put their name as people who help pick the stories. That means, by the way, we get to call the Sword and Laser Anthology edited by Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont because we helped select the stories.
That's the whole reason we did this, Tom.
Yeah, right? Old Mars is edited by George R. R. Martin, Gardner DeZoy, Michael Moorcock, and Joe R. Lansdale. Please send your corrections for how to pronounce Gardner's name to me. And Lighthouse Island, a novel by Paulette Giles, comes on October 8th as well. Do you want me to do October 15th too?
No, I'll do it. Okay.
All right.
The Last Ark by Stephen R. Donaldson, Fiendish Schemes by K.W. Jeter, Razor's Edge, Star Wars Empire and Rebellion by Martha Wells, Luminous Chaos, a novel, The Mysteries of New Venice by Valtat, Jean-Christophe, and Singh Menendra.
Oh, I don't know why those are in there backwards. I think that's Mahendra Singh and Jean-Christophe Valtat.
Oh,
I don't know why I put them in there with their inverted comma form. Sorry about that.
Jean-Christophe Valtat and Mahendra Singh. The
Cassanis
game by Wolfgang Jeschke.
Jeschke.
Heaven's Rise by Christopher Rice and Copperhead by Tina Connolly.
Woo!
It's a running joke in the forums now.
Oh, yeah.
They really think this is a hoot. I'm not a dummy.
No, definitely not. I don't think that is an emblem of your intelligence, the ability to guess pronunciations of things you've never heard spoken before.
Well, it's hard.
I'm not very
good at it.
Well, see, and I'm not either, but I just pretend like, it's totally Jeschke, obviously.
Well, I hope you guys are at least amused, at the very least.
Are you amused?
Do I amuse you? All right, well, let's kick off Bone Shaker by Sherry Priest. It is the first book in the Clockwork Century series, and have you started reading it?
Yes. Yeah, I just started reading it yesterday, actually. So I haven't had a big jump start, but I did. As soon as you picked it, I downloaded it and I started reading it. So now I'm going to switch to the audiobook. I'll have to go back from the start. I'm not too far in. It shouldn't be a big deal.
So why
did you pick Bone Shaker? I'm curious.
Well, we haven't done anything steampunky in a while. In fact, I'm trying to think if we've done something steampunky. I know we have for Vaginal Fantasy. Have we done anything steampunk?
I don't think we've done. Well, wait a minute. We didn't. We did elf punk. I think that's maybe the closest we've ever gotten to steampunk. Huh.
Well,
that's true.
I would maybe say that the Golden Compass is kind of steampunk.
Oh, yeah. I don't know
if I would really categorize it
in the wider realm. Could be steampunk for sure. It's got elements.
It's got zeppelins. This story is very steampunk. It takes place kind of in the years before the Civil War, before and during the Civil War, during the Gold Rush. It's really about the Gold Rush.
Yeah.
And the whole story takes place in the Pacific Northwest, primarily in Seattle. And what happened was there was an inventor, Russian prospectors kind of commissioned this inventor to create a machine that would be able to dig through the ground and find gold. Well, something went horribly, horribly wrong. I don't want to get too much into it because I don't want to spoil it too much. But the machine, the Bone Shaker, basically kicks off a zombie apocalypse, a contained zombie apocalypse. What does that sound?
That's the audiobook stuff for Bone Shaker. I'm just... Oh, okay, now I have to stop it. I was just giving you a little music bed.
Oh, thank you. So It's kind of a zombie story. It's kind of a steampunk story. And it's more than that as well. So I thought it would be fun. And we interviewed Sherry Priest. And
right around the time this came out, right?
Yeah. No, after. Bone Shaker's been out for a little while.
Well, I remember talking to her about Bone Shaker and talking to her about the zombies and stuff.
It's kind of her big hit. It's her big hit, I would say. So it's about the female character, which I also really like, that it has a female protagonist, which we haven't had a lot of. In fact, which I don't think we've had really since 100,000 Kingdoms. 100,000 Kingdoms.
Right, yeah, say it right. 100,000, exactly.
So the main character is this woman, Briar Wilkes, formerly Briar Blue. And her son basically ends up in this quarantine zone where there could potentially be zombies, and so she goes in after him. And that's the story thus far. So it's I like it. I noticed a lot of comments in the forums, and not just in the forums, but on the reviews of the story, that it's a little bit too much like bickering between the mom and the son in the beginning, but don't let that stop you, because I think it's going to be work past it, because I think there's going to be a much more interesting story to follow. And it is a series, which I know we've tried to stay away from in the past, but maybe it'll be something you want to continue with.
We do a really bad job of staying away from series.
We sure do. Yeah. Yep.
You can't avoid it, though. There's too many good books if you cut out series that you would never be able to have. And I feel like doing first books in a series is fine.
Yeah. There's Air Pirates, too.
Yeah. Oh, Air Pirates. Boneshaker was nominated for both the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award. It was a PNBA Award winner and winner of the Locus Award for Best Science Fiction Novel.
Nice.
So this is a good book, okay? If you didn't believe us.
Trust us. It's a good
believe
book.
Believe the ad people, or the award people.
The award people. Those award guys. But yeah, as we mentioned, available as an audiobook. It's on Kindle or find it in your local library.
Well, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. We have a free trial right now. If you would like, go to squarespace.com, use offer code SWORD10, and you could be using the same thing we use to make swordandlaser.com. Plain and simple. If you look at swordandlaser.com, as we do, and you think, wow, that looks like professionals designed it. It really does. And you're like, wait a minute. No, it's just Veronica and Tom. They are not professional web designers. Nope. That's because we use Squarespace. If you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team. They work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but it's super easy to use. It's pretty much drag and drop. Let me tell you, since Squarespace 6 came along, the calendar, just updating the calendar, has gone from being a chore to being a breeze. It's so darn simple to use, and it starts at just $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience, so you're not only getting a good-looking site on the web, but if somebody's looking at it on your phone, they're going to be like, wow, these people really went to town and created this whole mobile site that includes all the content, and it makes sense, and it's laid out specifically for my phone. That's Squarespace. They just do that behind the scenes. You get that free along with the service. So start a trial right now. No credit card required. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code SWORD10 to get 10% off, and you should show your support for Sword and Laser at the same time. We thank Squarespace for their support. Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website.
Woo! Thank you, Squarespace. All right, so we need to wrap up Demolished Man, The Demolished Man by Alfred Bester. Of course, this was the first Hugo winner, correct?
Right. That was the motivation for me picking it. Celebrating the Hugo Awards at the end of August.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
See, I was a little disappointed.
What?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I didn't hate it. Don't get
me
wrong.
Who are you?
I'm not bashing it. I gave it 3 stars on Goodreads, though, and I'm usually pretty friendly, at least to the stuff we read on Sword and Laser. I wanted it. I don't know. Maybe it's just the time it was written in. I just felt like it was a little light.
A little light. Okay.
You know, like the writing style was a little flippant, a little light. And again, I'm going to come off sounding like, well, Tom, you obviously don't like the genre. And that's the way things were written for pulp. And I get that. I totally get that. I think the story is compelling. I'm not put off by some of the anachronisms of it. I totally get that. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted a deeper story. And maybe when I read this era and I think of Philip K. Dick, I want Philip K. Dick. And that's totally unfair to Alfred Bester because he's not trying to be Philip K. Dick. He's trying to be Alfred Bester. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I was reading in that era and I was like, well, I want something weirder. I want something more twisty. And this seems to be just kind of a light dance built on top of the theories of Freud to me.
Well, can I tell you that I had a similar experience recently that you may find interesting? I just finished 451 and I had the same kind of feeling with that.
Fahrenheit 451?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And so that's funny. I called it 451 the other night to a group of people and they were like, call it 451 or 451. And I was like, okay, I was going to call it 451, Fahrenheit 451. They're like, nobody calls it that. I was like, okay. But anyway.
I do, but I'm nobody.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we call it. I felt like that was a little bit too obvious and a little bit too light for me. I didn't get that sense from Demolished Man. To me, Demolished Man, I thought had a lot of interesting aspects to it and a lot of interesting world building that I really wanted to learn more about, especially with the Espers, of course. And I thought Lincoln Powell was like a super interesting character that I felt I actually wish had been more represented in the book, like even more than he already was. Reich, I didn't love Reich as a character or as a person, but you're not supposed to, really. He's kind of like the major anti-hero in the story. And a lot of people, you know, had some issues with that, like if they were supposed to like him or if they were supposed to hate him, if he was a good guy, if he was a bad guy. The only issue I kind of had with it was what exactly happened with him? What did the Espers see in him that was so dangerous? I still don't really grasp that concept. like what was going to happen if he was allowed to continue.
Yeah, I thought that was where the book finally got good, right at the end, when it was like, okay, it's almost an Asimov foundation, like psycho history, like we have projected the ongoing effects of Reich if he is able to be himself, and it is going to be incredibly dangerous. And I would have liked more of that. I could sort of fill in the blanks myself and say, oh, well, the actions he takes will be like the butterfly flapping its wings that caused the hurricane. And it will have the effect of undermining institutions and eroding faith. But you're right. Bester doesn't really go into that. And I feel like that's the more interesting part to me. I have to remember, and I kept reminding myself, he's not writing at a time where that would have gotten published. Right. He has to write a mystery novel, a noir mystery novel. Right. And in fact, apparently someone in the Goodreads said that this was republished without the science fiction elements as a mystery novel.
Get out.
He just made it a straight ahead, like same plot, but he just took out the espers and made it just more like,
how would that even work?
Procedural. They were basically just chasing this guy who got away with a crime, and they're trying to figure out who killed the guy. Hmm. And it's the same thing at the end where, oh, it turns out that was his, he didn't realize it, but that was his father, and it was a psychological motivation, and that's why he did it. So you do rip out like half the story when you do that, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't have all of this like going into space and all that sort of stuff. But I think it makes a good mystery story. I liked the twist. I kind of saw it coming, but I didn't mind that.
You know,
I just felt the characters were a little paper thin.
You know what I found interesting too, and it's something that we kind of touched upon in the forums, is that even though it's technically a sci-fi book, I didn't really feel like there were a lot of sci-fi elements to it.
They were window dressing. Yeah, you're right.
It more felt like the ESP was a major factor, but that doesn't necessarily have to be science fiction.
No, and in fact, some people dispute whether that qualifies as science fiction when it's not something that science currently says is possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole separate debate.
Yeah, didn't we talk about that? Doesn't John Campbell have a thing about that?
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, it's so that was kind of funny to think about. And there was an article, a post by Jacob in the forums about tech that should be there but is not.
Yeah.
And he said, I like the book overall, but reading it, I started to think about the lack of cell phones and artificial insemination. They would have come in handy at several times and also changed the nature of the story. Was the idea of cell phones not present at the time of writing, or was it just not used? To me, it seems like it might have been imagined beyond its time. Cell phones, you know, not being in the imagination yet. No, I mean, of course. But I think a lot of sci-fi had the idea of like a communication device. I think that was probably in the lexicon at that point.
That's the kind of thing I can entirely forgive, knowing that when the story is written, because none of us can accurately predict what twists and turns technology will take. Mm-hmm. And so you're always going to include things that are long obsolete by the time that era comes around. And then you're going to include things like flying cars that still aren't here.
Right.
Unless you're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So...
As Tom Mahomey actually said in that forum thread, you have to work for S.H.I.E.L.D. to get a flying car.
I know. I stole that joke from her. Yeah, sorry.
Him.
I did it again. Sorry, Tom Mahomey. I stole that joke from him. Strike the previous comment. It doesn't matter. Gender, we're post-gender these days.
Right.
It's all in the past.
We are post-gender here at Sword and Laser. Okay, and then there was another forum thread about Finish It, Loved It, Pulpy Goodness. And this was started by...
Matthew.
I lost the thread and now won't update. He goes on to say, I know a lot of people on these boards have been pretty critical of The Demolished Man and the so-called SF classics. So I wanted to come out and say that I love this book, and I don't love it in spite of its flaws. I love it for its flaws. This is a rip-roaring pulp story. It's relentless in its forward momentum. It's got an interesting premise with some really big ideas woven in, and it manages to continually surprise and entertain. What I loved about this book is that it feels totally and completely of the 50s. Disclaimer, I am only 27 and thus didn't experience the 50s firsthand. It's a little bit quaint. There are moments of naivety and silliness that bring to mind I Love Lucy reruns or Leave It to Beaver. That's part of the charm. And I can enjoy that while maintaining feminist beliefs the same way I can enjoy Huck Finn while believing in racial equality. I love the Freudian elements for the same pseudo-nostalgic reasons. Sure, Freud isn't in vogue anymore, but this is a novel, not a psych text. These ideas were heavily debated then and are still quite prevalent today. That doesn't mean they're accurate, but what's more important than their accuracy is the fact that they are interesting. Bester takes these ideas and swings for the fences, touching on enduring political and social themes. That, to me, is one quality of an SF classic. TLDR, it's a fun pulpy story straight out of the 50s, enjoyable simultaneously as an interesting relic from a culture 60 years removed from us, and is a great example of a quick, light story with heavy ideas that speak to how we live together in a society.
That's awesome, and I don't want to take away from Matthew's enjoyment, but one of the reasons I enjoyed it less, and again, 3 stars, not 2 stars, not 1 star, 3 stars out of 5 for me. But one of the reasons is that I feel like it doesn't have enduring themes all the way through. Some of the themes are very obsolete. Some of the themes are things that we no longer consider to be, you know, like the race relations and the sexual relations. If they are still problems, they're problems in a different manner. And also the fact that, as he identifies, Freudianism is, if not discredited, certainly minor. Maybe that worm turns. Maybe that swings back around and this novel feels very current again in the future. And that is certainly possible. But I felt like it didn't stand the test of time as much. Although Matthew's right, there are definitely themes that did stand the test of time. Just the themes of love and greed and power hungriness. But I felt like it was really of the 50s in that sort of like, well, if a person is in a position of power, they'll always just want more. And we're living in a society where we see people, even if we don't believe them, saying, no, we actually want sustainability. You know, we want small growth, slow growth. You know, that's it's not 100% like power hungry all the time. That just seems like an old trope to me.
Interesting. I like these different points of view. I would not necessarily call it kind of like timeless elements, but nothing really jumped out at me that I was like, ooh, that is really dated. I kind of liked the 50s vibe.
Maybe only attitudes jumped out as dated. You're right. It's not like there's anything really hits you over the head and he's like driving a car, you know.
For me, it was more, if anything, it was more Reich constantly screaming and saying really obvious things to people.
He seemed like a caricature of the chief executive type. And it's like, chief executives aren't like that. Chief executives are actually almost always, Steve Ballmer accepted, very calm, you know, that's why they're chief executives, because they're able to calmly navigate and manipulate people.
I agree. I thought that was pretty cheesy/funny.
But yeah, I mean, I'm ranging into territory where you can very validly say, hey, Tom, guess what? It's a novel, okay? Mm-hmm. And Reich would not have been very interesting if he was calm and reasonable all the time. And that's a fair response. I understand.
Fair story. And then we had a final discussion over on Goodreads from Cliff, who said, considering this society was so entrenched with the concept of espers and how much they made life easier or more utopian, I found it particularly noteworthy that the same society turns to a computer, however comical it was 60 years later, to act solely as its judicial system.
Yeah, and people disputed whether it's Old Man Moses, the actual judicial system, or just an advisory body. But I think Cliff's point still stands, which is, in a system, and I think Bester probably did this on purpose, in a system where humans can read thoughts, they still need an impartial advisor, even if they, whether it's the final word or not.
Because who knows if the espers are going to have some kind of coup, or like where they decide to get together and go against, you know, someone during a trial, and no one can prove that they're not telling the truth or lying, unless they're another esper. I think it was more like a test to try to see if the facts given and the evidence given would be sufficient to mount a successful trial.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what Old Man Moses was supposed to be doing.
I love that it's called Old Man Moses too, by the way. I just thought that was awesome.
I thought it was Moses, and then you said Moses. Is it Moses?
Oh, no. If I said Moses, it was an accidental thing. It's Old Man Moses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I think that's a pretty good wrap-up. So you were not enthralled.
Not enthralled, but not disappointed. Well, maybe a little disappointed, but not upset. I didn't hate it.
Disappointed of his own pick.
I had a hard time getting excited to sit down and read it. That's the only thing. Well, it's not that I hated it. I didn't dread it. No, I think I will like Bone Shaker. I mean, there's zombies and steampunk. What's not to love?
What's not to love? All right, let's move on to Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Hey, so it's October 1st today at the time of recording. So that means we are exactly a month away from NaNoWriMo. People are talking about it already over on Goodreads, trying to figure out who's doing it, who's not doing it, what's going on. I think I'm out.
You're not going to get in the pool?
I think I'm out this year. I did the last 2 years.
Okay.
We've got anthology stuff going on. It's just, it's too much.
The only thing I will say is that I have finished NaNoWriMo the past 3 years, and I feel like the only way I was able to get to that point was by failing most out of the previous 6 years.
But I've never failed. So why would I start failing now?
Because what happened was I tried it the first year and I failed. And then I tried it the second year and I failed. And then I tried it the third year and I failed. Tried it the fourth year and I finished and I felt really good. And then I couldn't do it again the next year. But I just kept going back until I figured out how to make myself be able to do it no matter what was going on in that month. And that's the key about NaNoWriMo is they're saying, look, you can always find time to write if you really want to. If you don't really want to, then of course, don't make yourself do it. But I really wanted to. I was like, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to always find time to write. And I finally figured out how to do it. It took me a lot of trying to figure it out and a lot of going like, this year, it's not going to work. I'm not going to be able to do it. So you might just try with the knowledge that, you know what? It's okay to fail. Fail con it. Just be, you know, fail faster. Go in it with the eyes of like, I may not make it to the end of November. It's fine.
I don't even have a story idea in place. I guess
you don't
I have
need
a month,
to.
A month to think about it.
That's true. You got a month too. I've got one in place. So I'm going to give it a shot. And I'm not guaranteeing that I'm going to finish, but I'm going to try.
All right. I'll think
that's
about it.
That's my pep talk for you.
About it. Hey, in real writer news, Robin Hobb is apparently coming out with a new Fitz and Fool novel, which is yay. Yay for all of us who loved Assassin's Apprentice and, of course, all her other books out there. But Aiden wrote in the forums that there was a few details coming from a recent Robin Hobb interview. And she said, clearly, for some time, my publishers have wanted me to write a continuation of the Fitz and Fool story. It was my hope to work on such a story slowly, carefully, and very privately for years, because if I do it badly or hastily, I may have ended my career. I'm going to avoid posting about this. I'm not going to reply to any queries about it, not because I'm trying to be a diva or an artiste, but because I need to focus on writing, not talking about writing.
Fair enough.
I think I posted here before about what I see as the difference between being a writer and writing. I'm not going to be a writer about this. Mm-hmm. There'll be no hints, page counts, updates, teasers, or warnings that a main character will die. I know that many other writers use things like that to build excitement and increase internet chatter, but I don't. For me, writing is like working on a long, complicated math equation. Mm. If someone in the room is reciting phone numbers or saying the times tables out loud, everything gets scrambled. So I'm going to insulate myself.
You know, I totally respect that. And I think it's fine if you can for people to put up page counts. And even like Brandon Sanderson has done, post your writing as you're writing. But I could do that part of it, but I could never respond. Like when you're in the middle of writing it, that's a whole different kind of writing. I don't even think it's a bad kind of writing, but it's a collaborative type of writing. That's what the Mongoliad is for, you know, projects like that.
Speaking of Neal Stephenson, Patrick Norton told me that he lemmed Anathem. Patrick Norton, my host on Godzilla.
But if people don't realize, Patrick Norton is probably one of the biggest Neal Stephenson fans I have ever met.
That was news to me.
Yeah.
But anyway, off topic a little bit. Let's read this email real fast. Rob writes in who says, speaking of interlibrary loan, ILL. Well, we weren't recently speaking.
I.
Okay. What?
Sorry, it's a University of Illinois thing. When you say ILL, you have to say I for Illini.
I don't. I don't have to do that.
Well, you don't have to, but I have to do that.
I also was one of those kids who lived at their library. I used to use ILL to get books. To get books from all over. At one time, there was a fee hike where interlibrary loan was going from free to $1. As a kid with just a paper route, there was no way I was going to be able to afford the new fees. I spent a few hours one afternoon filling out forms for ILL to submit them the day before the pricing went into effect. The head librarian wanted to disallow this seeming abuse of the system, but other librarians stuck up for me. These books trickled in for me for over a year, and it was glorious.
Ah, glorious it was. I used interlibrary loan at the University of Illinois.
Of course you did.
Because as a student, they paid the fees.
That must have become very tiresome to have to say that over and over.
You just say interlibrary loan.
Okay. Like I did a couple times.
Yeah, you got it. I got around it. Yeah, exactly. You caught on quick.
A little bit of personal news. I am part of a Kickstarter for another anthology. This one is called Help Fund My Robot Army and Other Improbable Kickstarters. And I am the least of which authors are being involved in this anthology. I'm not very good, and there's a lot of good authors.
So what you're saying, Veronica, is you wrote a story that is going to be in this anthology.
I wrote a story that is going to be in this anthology.
That's awesome.
Which is great.
I may or may not have had a peek at the story and may or may not think it's totally awesome.
Okay. But David Wilson of Robopocalypse, Scott Sigler, Mary Robinette Cowell, Mary Lafferty, Bradley Beaulieu, who we're actually interviewing in 3 minutes, which you guys will get that interview later, Tobias S. Bucknell, Michael J. Sullivan, there's a lot.
David Melke! Nice.
Is involved. There's a lot of really great authors that are writing short stories for this. So if you want to see this happen, this anthology happen, we'll put the link in the show notes. I already wrote my story. I've still got some editing to do, but I'm really excited about it. And so you guys should check it out. It's called Help Fund My Robot Army, and all the stories have to do with Kickstarter. They're all Kickstarter themed.
Cool. Nice job, John Joseph Adams of Lompoc, California. You have created an amazing project.
Absolutely. So and it's only a $6,000 goal, so it's totally within our reach already. Still got 30 days to go, so please check that out.
Kick it.
Get it. And if you want to get in touch with us, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. Our website is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussion happens over on Goodreads. And if you want to call us, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. We will see you guys next time.
Bye.